Today on Maine Calling, Summer Reads. We kick off the season. Here's the thing about a good book. It belongs just about anywhere. On a warm, sunny day, that book fits right in at the beach, in the hammock, or on the deck. On a rainy day, that book is just as comfortable on the couch or at a cozy cafe. Book lovers can read anywhere. If that's you, today is your day on Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we help kick off the statewide summer program, Read Me, by meeting the authors behind the books of the year. Read Me is presented by the Maine Humanities Council, the Maine State Library, and the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. This year, Maine Poet Laureate Julia Bousma made the selections. We'll learn about them, and we'll get lots of other recommendations for your summer reading list. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Down East communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Since 2018, the Maine Humanities Council, along with the Maine State Library and Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, have encouraged the people of Maine to all read the same two books each summer, one a work of fiction and one nonfiction. This year's fiction selection is, drumroll please, The Great Transition, and the nonfiction selection is American Breakdown. Maine's Poet Laureate Julia Bousma selected this year's books. She is the author of three poetry collections and is with us today, as is Jennifer London, who is author of American Breakdown, Our Ailing Nation, My Body's Revolt, and The 19th Century Woman Who Brought Me Back to Life. She's a licensed clinical social worker. Also with us, Nick Fuller Googans, who is the author of The Great Transition and The Frequency of Living Things. He teaches fourth grade in Saco. We invite you to join the conversation. What's on your summer reading list? What do you want to recommend? We will be compiling a list after the program, so be sure and send us an email or post on Facebook or call 1-800-399-3566. Julia, I will start with you. It's a big assignment to pick the books for Read Me. How did you go about it?
Hi, thank you, Jennifer. It was such a pleasure and such an honor to have a chance to do this. I was presented with a short list of books. So I was asked to read four fiction books and three nonfiction books and come up with the selection from each one. So that is what I did, you know, and it was really fun in particular because I got to think as a writer, but I'm also library director for Webster Library in Kingfield. So I got to think with my librarian hat on as well, which was fun.
And what were you thinking? Were you thinking, are these books that are page turners? Are these books that'll really resonate with people right now? How does the library director think about?
What are the books that my patrons are interested in reading? What are books that will be topical and important and timely, but also engaging for my readers? And so I was so lucky to have these choices, which, you know, both of these books do both, you know, so that was terrific. And, you know, thinking about programming opportunities, what, you know, things like that, not everything hits for everyone. So we're trying to find books that I thought would have wide appeal for my patrons, but also feel very relevant, feel like books that could only have been written by Maine authors as well.
Wonderful. Well, let's talk to those Maine authors. Nick Fuller Googans, congratulations. My first question, if you're teaching fourth grade, how do you have the energy to write novels?
Hi, Jen. Thanks so much for having me here. Today actually happens to be my first day of summer vacation. Our last day of school is yesterday. And so I write a lot over the summer and I read a lot over the summer. So this is like to spend my first day of summer talking about books with readers. This is like, this is just the dream. Summer is a big writing time for me. And then like a lot of teachers, I get up very early and I spend that time doing a little bit, just a little bit of writing each day before school.
Great. So tell us about the great transition.
Well, I was like a lot of teachers, I do some odd summer jobs. And so in the summer of 2018, I was installing solar panels for Sundog Solar. Shout out to an amazing solar company based out of Searsport in the Mid Coast. And while I was doing that, I just started kind of fantasizing about, like, you know, what if there was this big kind of Green New Deal, New Deal type mobilization to try to save the world from the climate crisis? And what if I was part of that, installing solar panels? And, you know, kind of the fiction generator in my brain just ran with that. And that's what became the great transition, this idea of like, well, what would it look like if humanity came together to try to beat the climate crisis, and what kind of new society could we build in the process?
And Julie, I'll go back to you. What struck you about the great transition?
Well, first of all, I should say that I'm not typically a big reader of books set in the future. So it surprised me a little bit to be falling in love with this book as much as I did. But it's, you know, and I speak, you know, as a poet, it's incredibly poetically written. It's such a visual, beautiful book, the way it reconstructs memory. You know, the way it paces is just incredibly poetic while also being a page turner at the same time. So yeah, I really fell in love, but I was surprised at many points by the book. And I want to say too, the other thing that I think is really powerful about this book is that while it's imagining a future and it's speculative in that sense, it's really grounded in really believable relationships with people. You know, the characters are utterly relatable. The way that the teenage female protagonist is written, the relationship between the parents, the idea of what happens in a relationship over time when two people, you know, tend to grow in different ways, right? All of these things that we can all relate to were grounding for the book. And so they allowed the imaginative aspects of it to really hold up.
London, your book has a very intriguing title, American Breakdown, Our Ailing Nation, My Body's Revolt, and the 19th Century Woman Who Brought Me Back to Life. How did it come about?
Well, in some ways it started with a case of mono in 1989, right after I'd moved here to Maine from Canada to start my adult life, and the mono didn't go away. And anybody who's ever had or loved somebody who has what's now known as MECFS, myalgic encephalomyelitis chronic fatigue syndrome, knows how devastating the illness is. But in 1989, and still to this day with long COVID, it doesn't get taken seriously enough. And my first doctor told me I was just depressed and the best thing for me would be to get back to work. So that was really the fire under my butt. But I didn't have a focus until I read the biography of Alice James by Jean Strauss, which I had just found at a used bookstore, and it changed my life. So Alice James was the sister of the writer Henry James and the psychologist William James. And she was just as brilliant as her brothers, and she was so witty. But for most of her life, she was bedridden with an illness that, to me, when I read the biography, made me feel like I wasn't alone, and made me wonder if what she and I suffered from might be one and the same thing.
Mm. And London, talk about how your job as a social worker overlaps, does not overlap, affects your work as a writer?
Yeah, so that's what's it's just kind of funny that I had been it, this book I started writing I started researching this book in 2001, started writing it in 2007. It was so ultimately it took me 20 years to write. I started writing it as I was finishing up my master's in social work, or started researching it. And you had a great question, and my brain is
the
gone.
Intersection of your work as a social worker and
oh, there we go. Thank you so much. Thank you. So the book is ended up. I mean, I had some ideas that I found old papers that I really stuck to in terms of what I wanted to do with the book, but what happened is what I really came to be doing with the book was looking at the contexts. So always sort of, oh, here's this problem with this illness and similar complex multi-system illnesses not getting taken seriously by doctors and researchers. Why? What's the context? And then Alice James's life in the 19th century helped to give me some context and help me to understand the impacts of industrial capitalism on our health. But also looking at the way women were treated in the 19th century and before, and thinking about just the context of how men and doctors, male doctors in particular, but not just, I mean, the medical system is it's a patriarchy. What are the social contexts that that created the current conditions?
Interesting.
And that I didn't realize until I was teaching a foundational social work course that was my like mind-blowing course when I in like 1998. I didn't realize until I was teaching it. I was like, oh, this book is actually really, really social worky. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. And Julia, what struck you about this and why did you choose the book?
Well, first of all, just the mention of Alice James had me excited. I've worked before at Alice James Press, Alice James Books in Farmington. It used to be in Farmington. My apologies. It's Independent Poetry Press, and based on the idea of Alice James, right, inspired by her. And so I was immediately caught when I saw that it had anything to do with Alice James. And then in reading the book, you know, the scope and ambition of this book in terms of technique is just incredible. You know, I'm often talked to students about thinking about their poems like a kind of camera. You know, you zoom in, you get something close, then you can kind of zoom out and get a wider picture, and then you can move back in. And London's book does that in this incredible way, where there's the personal experience, there's the paralleled experience with Alice James, and then there are a million other social threads that run, you know, political threads, scientific threads that run between and connect them. So it's just an incredible feat to so fluidly and beautifully connect all of these incredibly important themes together.
Well, I do want to mention that this year's Read Me also includes selections for children's and young people's literature. The selections were made by Samara Cole Doyen, and the books are, for middle grade readers, Wishing Season by Annika Moroz Risi, and for younger readers, Rostam's Picture Day, Pustin. So all of those will be available on the of course, on the README website and also on the list that comes out from us in just a little while. Calling in now, Austin Taylor, who is the author of the novel Notes on Infinity. Austin, thanks for calling in. Austin, are you there? Can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, now I can. Wonderful. Awesome. Tell us about your
Thank
book.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, so Notes on Infinity is my first novel. It's about two young Harvard students in chemistry, Zoe and Jack, who are fierce competitors turned close collaborators. They start working on a new kind of anti-aging drug that maybe can make us live forever. And they drop out and form a startup and achieve dazzling success until a scandal threatens to destroy their company and their partnership. So it's about ambition and betrayal and the things that we do for the people we love.
Well, we have to note that you are a young author and you started writing this book while you were still in college at Harvard. So tell us how the book came about.
Yeah, so I'm from Central Maine. I grew up in St. Albans and then moved to Newport when I was in the eighth grade and went to Nokomis. And then I went to Harvard. And I studied chemistry at Harvard. And so kind of two aspects of my experience inspired the book. One was that transition from a smallish public school in Central Maine to Harvard. That was pretty jarring change, and that inspired one of the main characters, Jack. And then my time as a chemistry student and my work in the lab inspired the other character, Zoe, because I wanted to think and talk about what it's like to be a young woman in chemistry right now, which is still a very, very male field. And then the last thing that inspired the book was watching some really high profile startup scandals in the tech and biotech space over the past, you know, 5 or so years.
Well, Austin, congratulations. We have to ask you, because you called in, what books are you looking forward to reading this summer? Or is there a book you've read recently that you'd like to recommend?
Yeah, so I'm currently reading and loving Sally Rooney's new novel, Intermezzo. And then I recently reread, because I teach English part-time, I reread with a student Stephen King's novella, The Body, which I hadn't read since high school, and was just reminded of how incredible a story that is. So if you haven't picked that one up in a while, I would definitely recommend.
Austin, and The Body is what the movie Stand By Me is based on, correct?
That's right.
Yeah, well, that is a wonderful movie, so a great recommendation. Austin Taylor, congratulations. Austin is the author of Notes on Infinity. We are going to take a quick break. This is the Summer Reads program on Maine Calling. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we are talking about Read Me, a statewide program that gets people in Maine all reading the same novel and work of nonfiction. Two books. With me are Julia Bausma, who's the Maine Poet Laureate, a librarian, and author of 3 poetry collections, and she was the recommending author this year. And those two books are by Nick Fuller Googans, who is with me. His book, The Great Transition, is the one that was selected. His new book is The Frequency of Living Things. And Jennifer London is the author of American Breakdown, Our Ailing Nation. She also writes essays and poetry and is a social worker. Share your comments and questions. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or call 1-800-399-3566. We'd love to hear your recommendations. On the line with us now is Christine Murphy, who is the author of Notes on Surviving the Fire. Christine, thanks for calling into the show.
Hi, Jennifer.
Tell us about your book.
Oh, so I wrote a literary thriller about a graduate student's amateur investigation into the supposed overdose of her best friend. I've got a northern rural Maine protagonist who moves to Southern California and is navigating living among wildfires down the road from Oprah's house while she is poor and grieving and surviving sexual violence. It's a lighthearted comedy.
How did you choose to tackle these themes?
Well, I think much like your previous speaker, I've lived a lot of them. And I have to say, I personally have lived in over 100 countries. I spent a decade as a hippie backpacker. And moving from northern New England to Southern California was easily the most foreign of places I'd ever been to. I think Hollywood's one of those places that we all have opinions on, even if we've never been. And then when you actually go there, you think, well, this is wild. So I wanted to play around with that. I wanted to play around with higher education. Again, I think a lot of us have read books or heard stories about the ivory tower of PhD life, but when you actually live it, it's very different. And I tried to write something that was funny and smart and engaging, but also very realistic about subjects we're not usually realistic with.
All right. Well, it sounds very intriguing. While you're on the line, what would you recommend? What have you read recently or are planning to read that you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
What I recommend to everyone if they want just a wild, crazy romp is the book Patricia Wants to Cuddle by Samantha Allen. It is a crazy, over-the-top murder action thriller about a lesbian death cult worshiping a Sasquatch in the Northwest. I'm obsessed with this book. And then I personally am also reading The Lilac People, which is a wonderful historical drama about trans people in World War II by Milo Todd, as well as The Afterlife Project, which is a really moving post-apocalyptic future novel by Tim Weed that just came out.
Wow. Well, Christine Murphy, congratulations to you. Christine is the author of Notes on Surviving the Fire. We'll go to Kevin now calling in from Topsom. Kevin, I understand you are an author as well. Tell us about your book.
Terrific. I will. Thanks so much. I've written a book that is, it's a love and war story set in Nebraska, but every page reminded me of Maine because it's about our relationships to land and water. And more so our relationships to each other, because I think basically how we treat each other is eventually how we treat the planet. And unless we start to sort that out, we're all going to be in trouble. So it's really a love story. And the love is of the Ogallala Aquifer, which basically irrigates the entire Midwest from Texas to South Dakota. And of course, it's disappearing. So that's why the novel is called The More We Take. And I try to tell it in a fun, creative way. And so Sitting Bull shows up and Crazy Horse shows up and Chief Justice John Marshall shows up to try to explain the U.S. relationship to indigenous people. And it's all through three regular people in Nebraska who are sorting out their own tangled personal histories and start to think more about their relationship to place. And that gives them the courage to start thinking about how we can be better stewards of this land that we took from its original stewards, and we're kind of messing up now because we're really good at taking, but not so good at thinking about what's the cost of all we take. And if we can maybe treat each other a little bit better, start putting that some of that energy towards love and not war, then we can also take better care of the planet and everyone will be better off.
So The More We Take by Kevin Kernan. Kevin, thank you so much for calling in. And congratulations, Nick. It strikes me your book and Kevin's and others that we've mentioned have something in common, and this is grappling with climate change in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think this has got to be, you know, with so much going on right now, but this is just like existentially, right, this huge problem that's just going to keep confronting us. And I think about it a lot with my students, like this will probably be the biggest issue that they face when they're our age. And so I think it's great that there's this genre now of climate fiction coming out.
Joining us now is Ron. Oh, go ahead.
I just want to say that like Julia, I'm not a reader of speculative fiction, but I picked up Nick's book and it is so beautifully written. Everything that Julia said is right, but also it made me realize how important books like this that are set in the future are for us, because I'm not finished reading yet, so I don't know if he goes back, but like you start and you're already in the future. Like the crisis has already happened, so you don't even have to suffer through the crisis. You just get to go to the future where the people have like figured out a way to be together and to make the world better, and it helps to give us all some hope and a vision for what we could have despite what's happening now.
Joining us now, Ron Curry. His latest book is The Savage Noble Death of Babs Dion. Ron, thanks for calling in. Did I pronounce your book title correctly?
It depends on what part of the state you're in, but as far as I'm concerned, you did fine.
Well, tell us about it.
Yeah, so you know, on its surface, it's interesting you're having a conversation about climate fiction, because on its surface, Babs is, as you would expect from the title, about a woman named Babs Dion, who is, you know, a Franco-American grandmother in Central Maine, where I grew up. And she, you know, she dotes on her grandkids. She takes care of her neighborhood. She's very attached to and protective of the Franco identity, but she's also sort of a crime matriarch. She runs the rackets in Waterville, where I grew up. But underneath the surface of that, the book is about, there's plenty of subtextual things going on, including what I think is a pretty obvious contemplation of climate. So what happens, the plot of the book is basically that Babs is running this drug operation, an opioid operation in Waterville, and she attracts the attention of a much larger operation who sends a sort of enforcer, sort of muscle, to find out who's responsible for the opioid trade in Waterville and basically tell them that they're out of business now. And Babs's youngest daughter, Sis, goes missing and hijinks ensue, right? But the enforcer who was sent to Waterville is a character that's known simply as the Man. And over and over again, the Man talks about how who he is. People ask him, who are you? And he tells people over and over again that who he is doesn't matter. He's sort of a stand-in. He's referred to as uncanny, but of this world. And he's sort of a stand-in for climate in that he sees his job as he's the person or the thing that shows up when you've been given ample warnings that you've ignored, and now you can no longer pretend that you won't have to suffer the consequences of your actions. This is basically how he functions in the book.
The man is the metaphor. Yeah.
Yeah, and I learned, I worked on a TV show for Apple TV called Extrapolations, which was sort of a near future climate anthology. And one of the things that I learned in working on that, which was very directly and literally about climate change, was how difficult it is to dramatize climate, right? Because it is by its very nature, it's not very dramatic. It happens slowly and out of sight. You can't necessarily draw connections between the more dramatic things that happen as a consequence of climate change and climate change itself. And so I became convinced that the only really effective way to write about climate, at least in a fictional narrative, was indirectly through metaphor.
Ron, since we have you on the line, we have to ask you for recommendations. What book would you like to recommend to our listeners?
I've got a couple. One is a new favorite called Outer Mark by a guy named Jason Brown, who's a native Mainer, also from Central Maine, like me. Beautiful, beautiful writer. He's been doing it for a long time. Outer Mark is set on a fictional coastal island in Maine, and it follows a couple of people who are more or less contemporaneous, but it also delves back into the history of the island and really is a beautiful sort of elegiac meditation on what it is to be part of a community that's the purpose of which seems to be fading away, right? Which you don't have to be on an island to understand what that feels like. And then the other is sort of a wild card that my wife gave to me for my birthday recently. It's called You Can Never Die by a guy named Harry Bliss. It's a graphic memoir, sort of a hodgepodge of Bliss's life. And he is a cartoonist and he does covers for The New Yorker. But the book is about the central thing in the book is his relationship with his dog. And she's the person, the you referred to in You Can Never Die. And if you're like me and you're a dog person and you happen to have an older dog, it's just sort of beautifully devastating.
Yeah, and I know his work, so that just popped right into my head as you said that. Ron Curry, thank you so much for calling in. Ron Curry's latest book is The Savage Noble Death of Babs Dion. Thank you so much, and good luck with it. Let's see, we'll go to Bob, who's calling from Saco. Hi, Bob, go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a Maine author. My pen name is Robert Raymond. I hate to shamelessly plug my book, but I can't help myself. My book is called Finding Our Compass. It's a nonfiction book. It tackles most of the challenges that that America is facing today, but it doesn't tackle them in a left or right manner. The word Democrat or Republican never appear in the book. The word left and right never appear in the book. What I do as a writer is I take the issues that are challenging America and I look at it from a different perspective, and I lead the reader to a common sense, sensible solution. I just had a website launch about my book this week, so I'm excited about that. I have some poetry on there. I'm posting a lengthy blog on there this afternoon.
So Bob, tell us again your pen name. The book is called Finding Our Compass, and tell us your pen name again.
Robert Raymond.
All right, Robert Raymond. Well, Bob, thank you so much for calling in, and good luck with it.
Thank you so much.
That's great. And we'll move on to Portland and Kitsy. Hi, Kitsy. Go ahead.
Hi, Jen. I'm not an author, but I am an avid reader, and I have two books I have not been able to put down. One is called Praying with Jane Eyre, Reflections on Reading as a Sacred Practice by Vanessa Zoltan. And I recommended it to every person I know, and I've reread it. And the other one that I hold in my other hand is incredible, by a woman who, at the time she wrote it, lived in Portland. I'm not sure if she still does. The title is Voices of the Night. And her name is, I think it's Gemma, G-E-M-M-A, Cannon, C-A-N-N-O-N. And it's a story about a woman who is in deep grief, who can't seem to shake it. And she ends up volunteering at the Longfellow House, and then she goes into the library and reads everything by and about Longfellow. And she discovers that he has the most incredible way of dealing with grief, loss, and getting through it. And it heals her. So I just pass this out to everybody. I mean, it's the best, and I'm a previous Unitarian Universalist minister and hospice chaplain. So death and dying and grief has been, a major part of work that I have done. So I can't recommend both of them more highly.
Kitsy, thank you so much for recommending those. And really intriguing idea, the connection to Longfellow and Longfellow's house. And we know that he had so much tragedy in his life. Just really heartbreaking when you learn about it. Julia, this list that we've begun and will continue illustrates just how incredible the writing scene is in Maine.
Absolutely. I'm enjoying so much listening to the range and of what people are writing and reading. And I love hearing how many people are connecting to social issues that feel really important right now, and thinking about ways to tell those creatively and in ways that I think help. We're at a time when we really need more empathy in our society. And I think that's something that books can give us, right? We have this ability to stand in someone else's shoes and to imagine life from their perspective. And so to tie that, that drive toward greater empathy creatively with topics that we so badly need better solutions for, I think that was something that drew me to the two books I selected for the Read Maine program. And it's so interesting and wonderful to hear that that's a driving impulse for readers and writers all over the state.
Well, thank you so much for that. I'm sort of a little blown away by your thoughts, Julia. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We're talking about summer reading. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Our topic today, the Read Me or Read Maine statewide reading program, and also good books to read this summer. My guest, Nick Fuller Googins, an elementary school teacher and the author of The Great Transition, one of the books that was chosen. And Jennifer London is a licensed clinical social worker and author of American Breakdown, Our Ailing Nation. And that was the other, the nonfiction book that was selected by our third guest, Julia Bausma, the Maine Poet Laureate. If you're quick, you can join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, or post a comment on Facebook or Instagram. Now we're going to turn to Elizabeth DeWolf, Beth DeWolf, who is a professor of history and gender, women, and sexuality studies at the University of New England. Her latest book is Alias Agnes, The Notorious Tale of a Gilded Age Spy. Elizabeth, thanks for calling in.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to talk about the book.
Well, tell us about it. How did you decide this is a story you wanted to tell?
Well, I first learned about this story from an 1894 account of a notorious trial, and I ran into this book at a rare book show. And as it turns out, I uncovered a Gilded Age spy that no one had known about. And so this book is the story of a Wiscasset resident, Jane Armstrong Tucker, who was a stenographer turned undercover detective for a U.S. congressman. So in 1894, Jane Tucker worked behind the scenes of a notorious Gilded Age trial that pitted the congressman against his mistress of 10 years. Now, he had promised to marry her, and then he married someone else. So Jane's mission was to befriend the mistress, Madeline Pollard, and in their heart-to-heart talks, steal her secrets. And because Jane Tucker was a female detective, she could do what no male detective could. She could have bedside chats with Madeline, go shopping with Madeline for underwear, and embed herself for 6 weeks in a home for fallen women, all the while gathering information to use against Madeline in court. So Alias Agnes tells the story of Jane Tucker's 10 weeks as a Gilded Age girl spy.
Oh, so fun. Well, Beth, I want to say congratulations. Really, I haven't heard of a book like that before. Before we let you go, we have to ask you for recommendations for summer reading.
Summer reading for a faculty member is just the best. So the first thing that I've been reading, and I'm absolutely captivated, is a novel, Amelia Hart's The Sirens. And it's like her first book, Wayward. The Siren is about interconnected stories of women across three centuries and their relationship to the sea. And the second book I'll recommend is by Amy Tan, and it's The Backyard Bird Chronicles. It is Amy Tan's daily recordings, both in words and in illustrations, of the birds she sees in her backyard. But it's also about learning patience, being in the moment, and just observing nature. It is a beautiful book.
Well, Beth, thank you so much for calling in. Elizabeth DeWolf's latest book, Alias Agnes, The Notorious Tale of a Gilded Age Spy. We'll go quickly to Robin in Harpswell. Hi, Robin, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm not an author, but I just wanted to pass on the name of a woman who has written several books set in weather crisis situations. Her name is Kai Emmons, kaiemmons.com is her website. She did Weather Woman, which was set in Maine. She has had lots of ties to Maine. And one of her later books was Unleashed, which is set in California wildfire situations. And it's just beautiful fiction, interesting characters. The lead character is usually a woman. She received a lot of recognition. She passed away a couple of years ago, but at a relatively young age. But
well, Robin, thank you so much for the recommendations. I really appreciate Kai Emmons. On the line with us now is Gary Stevens and Dave Ead. They co-wrote a book called Stolen Seasons, How Maine Sports Survived the COVID-19 Pandemic. Gary and Dave, thanks for calling in.
Good morning, Jen. Thank you so much for having us.
Hi, Gary. I'll start with you, Dave. Why'd you decide to cover this as a book?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we all lived it. We all went through the pandemic. And for Gary and I, you know, we were trying to figure out what was happening with primarily Maine high school sports. And there were so many moving parts on a daily basis. It really... You know, leagues were shutting down, you know, day to day, and things were happening, and really getting, you know, communication out to the public was really a challenge. So, you know, Gary and I had talked, and, you know, that once the pandemic was over, we decided to, you know, put pen to paper. And we wrote this. It's really, the book is really about the different levels of Maine sports, and the stories are so different as far as how each, you know, the Sea Dogs, Maine High School, how each, you know, league organization got through the very worst of times.
Yeah. Gary, I want to ask you, what or who stood out for you while doing the research for the book? Did you have any surprises you'd like to share?
I think, Jen, there, as Dave said, it's a book about resilience. It's a book about it closed a lot of stories of amazing Maine people who did incredible things. Dave and I would both agree probably the star of our book might be Ben Gitte, the current head hockey coach at Bowdoin College, who in 2021 was the head coach of the Maine Mariners. And it's a marvelous story we'd love our readers to learn about, where he actually has a player who has tested positive for COVID-19 in Quebec City. He has to leave the young man who's 20 years of age behind right before Christmas and goes back in the middle of the night. He outfits his SUV with a shower curtain to prevent some distance between him and the young man, and brings him back to Maine through a blizzard, through the customs in the most remote part of Vermont, and then attends to that young man's needs throughout the Christmas season. He and his wife prepared meals for him for two straight weeks. Mm-hmm. It's stories like that that are really unique and special, and that's what the book is about. It's about ordinary Mainers doing extraordinary things.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. And I've heard from a lot of people, both of you, how much they've enjoyed not only reading it, but your presentations about it. That's Gary Stevens and Dave Ead. Their book, Stolen Seasons, How Maine Sports Survived the COVID-19 Pandemic. So many callers. I'm going to get to as many as I can. Let's see. We'll go to Maggie in York. Hi, Maggie. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I would like recommendations for really good mysteries, and not psychological or like really gruesome types of things, but just good mysteries where they take place in, you know, current times or Victorian times.
Okay, great question. Julia, London, Nick, any of you big mystery fans have any recommendations? I think you've hit a genre that's not our guest genre, but I have to say, Maggie, there are a lot of great Maine mystery writers. Paul Dworen pops into mind. And of course, I'm drawing a blank on the others now, and I'll think of them as soon as I go. But I think if you Google Maine mystery writers, that is sort of a genre that's really well represented here. So good luck to you, and thanks for your call. Let's see, we'll go to Belfast and Zafra. Hi, Zafra, go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to real quick, on the theme of eco-fiction, there's one of my favorite authors, Neal Stephenson, has a book called Termination Shock, largely driven by the effects of sea level rise due to climate change. And it's a fun eco-political techno-thriller that follows four or so different characters whose stories all end up intertwining, and it includes sort of the backlash of climate change and how it creates winners and losers, and how attempts to fix climate change can also have negative impacts in other parts of the world. It's a lot of fun, and I highly recommend it.
All right, another book connected to climate change. Thank you so much, Zafra, for calling in. Let's see here. We'll go to Aviva calling from Vinyl Haven. Hi, Aviva. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call and doing the program. I'm going to recommend two books. One is Plugging My Own, which came out a couple years ago. It's called Divining Chaos, the Autobiography of an Idea. And it's also about climate change. It's about how I went through the transformation of dealing with my own traumas and my personal life, and then transformed that into an approach to create what's called ecological art, which designs solutions to things like climate change. And the other book is called The Water Knife by Paolo Bacigalupi, and it's about a time in the near future, which seems pretty close now, when water becomes privatized and monetized, and the implications for society.
Well, Aviva, thank you so much for calling in, and good luck with your book. Nick, I'm noticing we're running short on time, and we've been talking about the Great Transition, but you have a book that you have written since then that's new, The Frequency of Living Things. Can you tell us about that?
Sure, yeah. This book also starts, it opens right here in Maine. And this is a family novel, and it's about three sisters, and two of them are one-hit wonders, rock musicians, and it's been a couple decades since their big hit. They're struggling, and their younger sister Josie is trying to take care of them. And Josie is an evolutionary biologist who studies ants. So this book has a lot of science and a lot of music and a lot of activism too. I'm excited for it. And I was excited that some of it could be set right here in Maine.
Great, great. In London, I have to ask you, are you working on another book or are you taking a break? What's going on?
I am working on another book, but in a way it is like taking a break because it's very different from American Breakdown. It's a memoir about swimming at a specific spot in the Presumpscot River and the people and animals that I meet there. It's just a place of joy for me.
Oh, wonderful. And Julia, what about you? You know, you've spent a lot of time right now talking about other people's work, but you are Maine Poet Laureate. And I'm wondering if you are writing through all of this, all these other responsibilities you have.
Well, not as much as I should be, but I do have a new book that is coming out in just a couple of weeks, called Deaf Fluorescence, which is a little hard to say, out from Sundress Publications. And that will, of course, be another poetry book.
It's a book of poems. Okay, wonderful. All right, so we have a tiny bit of time. Let's see here. I'll try to squeeze in a couple more calls. We'll go to Karen calling from Brunswick. Go ahead. Karen, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Yeah, go ahead. We're tight on time, so if you could be quick, that'd be great.
Okay, I will quickly state there is a new book out written by Robert Breen called The Light of Civil Day. And he is a poet. This book's been published by the Maine Irish Heritage Center in Portland, Maine. And he writes not only about the political and cultural issues facing us today, but gives it in a perspective that is truly provocative and asks you to really think.
Great. Thank you so much, Robert Breen. And we're going to squeeze in Maria and Serena. If you guys can be super quick, that'd be great. Serena, hi. Are you there?
Yeah, we're calling from New Sharon, and we just had a couple of books we love, but also wanted to say how much we love our local library's summer reading program. Last year, our family, everyone in our family won some prizes for reading books, and Serena won Legos. her brother won a microscope, and my husband and I each won a book, just for doing a lot of
super
reading.
Maria, you know what? I have to cut you off. So I'm going to ask you and anybody else who is not able to get through to post their recommendations on Facebook. Also, we had asked all of our guests for their recommendations, and we're out of time. So the list that comes out in a couple days will include those, because we do want to hear what your recommendations are. And I want to thank you all for joining us today. Julia Bousma, the Maine Poet Laureate, author of 3 poetry collections, and the recommending author for Read Me 2025. Jennifer London, a social worker, poet, speaker, and the author of American Breakdown. Nick Fuller Googans, the author of The Great Transition and The Frequency of Living Things. He teaches 4th grade in Saco. Today's sound engineer, Sam Tracy. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn, and that music you hear composed by Mike Jandro. This is Maine Public Radio.